Funding for this podcast comes from MathWorks, creators of MATLAB and Simulink software, accelerating the pace of engineering and science. Learn more at MathWorks.com.
This is Radio Boston. I'm Evan Horowitz. After all the divisiveness and turmoil, Brett Kavanaugh is a Supreme Court justice, having been approved by the Senate and sworn into office over the weekend. Welcome to the Kavanaugh era of the Supreme Court, where five conservative justices are poised to outvote their four more liberal colleagues in a way that threatens to turn a venerable American institution into yet another arena for partisan brawling. Or at least, that's the fear. Justice Elena Kagan spoke on Friday at Princeton University and reflected on this new Supreme Court, one without a true center.
There has been a person who found the center, or people couldn't predict in that sort of way, and that's enabled the court to look as though it was not owned by one side or another, and was indeed impartial and neutral and fair.
Kagan says the court has to be cognizant of how it will now be perceived.
All of us need to be aware of that, every single one of us, and to realize how precious the court's legitimacy is. You know, we don't have an army and we don't have any money, and the only way we get people to do what we say that they should do is because people respect us and respect our fairness.
So, can this court stand above the political fray and maintain its legitimacy? Or will it fall prey to the partisanship that's splintering this country? Joining me now is Rosanna Cavallaro. She's a professor of law at Suffolk University. Hello, Rosanna.
Good afternoon.
Also with us from Washington, D.C. is Garrett Epps. He's a professor of constitutional law at the University of Baltimore School of Law. Hello, Garrett.
Hey, Evan. How are you?
I'm doing great. Garrett, I'll start with you because you wrote a piece over the weekend where you talked about how your sense of the court's legitimacy was shaped by your experience growing up in the segregated South and watching the Supreme Court force communities to accept integration. Why start there? Why does your sense of the legitimacy start there?
Well, I start there. That is, as a very young boy, I think it was an unusual time to grow up. I became aware of the Supreme Court. I became aware that the people around me were very critical of the court. They thought that the justices were wrong. You know, I remember as a boy seeing the billboards that said impeach Earl Warren and so forth. And yet I also knew, growing up in a relatively small southern town, I knew the federal judges who were enforcing or trying to enforce Brown versus Board of Education and the other desegregation opinions. And I saw the way that people in the community finally, history and the prestige of the court and just the sense of national unity forced people to fall into line, to say, well, this isn't what we would have chosen, but the court has spoken, and we're going to try our best to make it work. That was a formative experience for me. To me, a federal judge was sort of the the next best thing to being God. And, you know, the Supreme Court today has not got that place in our national life. And if a crisis like desegregation comes along, I don't think it will have those reserves of prestige to draw on.
So that really is, I mean, that's what makes that moment so powerful, because it speaks to the legitimacy of the court, why the court needs this legitimacy to enforce its rulings, and at that time, another time of turmoil. So Rosanna, if the court's legitimacy depends on Americans viewing it as a body driven by legal reasoning as opposed to partisanship, how can they enforce controversial rulings like they did 50 years ago? How can they go forward in difficult times and gain consensus?
Well, I think that's what people are concerned about right now. And I think that the dynamic, the truth of the matter is that the vast majority of these kinds of issues are about consensus buy-in, that citizens do accept these things as norms and accept the power of the court. And I think we still have a ways to go until we lose that completely. But what we don't want to see is that it's eroded at the margins, is that there's a skepticism that kind of aggregates or accumulates to a place where there really is a doubt about legitimacy. I mean, I don't think we're going to have a difficulty having whatever rulings are coming down in this next term be questioned in that way. I hope we're not. But the fact that people are continually talking about legitimacy is itself a threat to legitimacy.
And that's a good segue, because listeners, we want to hear you talk about legitimacy. Do you have faith in the Supreme Court? Are you worried about a crisis of legitimacy in the court? You can call us at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. And you can send us a tweet at Radio Boston. So, Garrett, who's to blame here? Is this a plague of both your houses moment where the parties have conspired to undermine the legitimacy of the courts, or do you see it differently?
I think, I'm supposed to sit here and say, oh, both left and right are to blame, we wring our hands, but I really can't. I think that the project of the Republican Party has been for more than 25 years to gain control of the court, and the last 2 years have been the worst possible exemplars of that strategy, beginning with the decision to refuse to allow a president to make an appointment to the court, and moving forward to the nomination and confirmation of Justice Kavanaugh, which involved the most not simply bare-knuckle partisan operations within the legislature, but eventually a kind of terrorizing of the populace, where you have the president standing in front of screaming crowds, who are yelling, lock her up, talking about the woman who accused Justice Kavanaugh of sexual assault many years ago. The court's legitimacy has taken a very serious hit. This is not something to worry about for the future. The future is now, the question is going forward, how can the court rebuild or reshape its place in the national dialogue? I don't think it can ever go back to the prestigious place it occupied until recently. I think we are in unknown territory.
Well, one case that often comes up as a kind of watershed moment in the court's legitimacy is Bush v. Gore. Right? Here's Justice Breyer speaking in 2014 on the decision the Supreme Court made in that case, which many say determined the outcome of an election.
I was in the dissent, yes. I thought it was wrong. What I think is so remarkable about the country is that people thought it was wrong, about half the country probably. Mm-hmm. Others might have thought the opposite, but everybody followed it.
Rosanna, is that all that legitimacy requires? They rule, we follow the rulings? Is that enough?
No, I mean, I think there's a lot more there. They rule and we follow the rulings because of, as I said, this idea of buy-in and a perception that the institutions endure and sort of trump the day-to-day or year-to-year wins of partisanship. I do think that's an incredibly important example that the court ruled in Bush v. Gore, and Gore stepped aside, and Gore's voters acquiesced, but not without a lot of rancor. And that rancor, I think, it kind of simmers and bursts on the scene now and then. One of the things I think is so important right now is that this confirmation battle, and I hate to even use that word, but that's what it was, this confirmation battle took place in the backdrop of this midterm elections, and everything was in relation to how was it going to play for the elections. That's exactly how it should not happen. They could have withdrawn him when the temperature changed, as they did with other nominees in the past. We think of Judge Ginsburg or some of the others who fell for much less complex reasons. But they didn't because of the impact that they thought each party thought it would have on these midterms. And I think that's really a very negative thing for the institution of the court. Hmm.
Listen, as a reminder, we want to hear from you. You want to talk about the legitimacy of the Supreme Court? You think this is all being overblown? Give us a call, 1-800-423-8255. And let's take a first call from Paul in Sutton, Mass. Paul, how are you?
Yes. Hi, good. No, I don't think this is being overblown at all. I'm an independent, but I clearly heard, the candidate that was, that was elected indicating, drawing a comparison between, the pressures he was seeing with the Clintons and then saying, well, what's coming around is going to go around, meaning basically you know, just wait and see what's going to come, because I'm the conservative, and you know, you're all going to see what's coming.
Yeah, no, thanks, Paul. I mean, that's exactly how partisanship spirals. One side sees the other take a step that they deem a step too far, and they respond by matching or overmatching with their own step, and you end up with this problem. And it's not going to get easier because the rulings are going to get... the rulings that are potentially coming are contentious, right? Not just on abortion rights. But, Garrett, there's also this question about the executive agencies. That is, will this court allow the federal government to do its job regulating the environment, regulating the financial industry, and basically implementing standard regulations?
You know, well, I think the only question there is whether they're going to cut back on this regulatory power slowly. It's going to be a death of a thousand cuts, or all at once. But the conservative legal movement has been hostile to these regulatory agencies really since its inception in the 80s. And now they have justices who have expressed some hostility to it. They have a majority of them. And the question is, do they move incrementally, giving the Congress a chance to adjust, giving the economy a chance to adjust, or are they going to enact some fairly radical separation of powers doctrines that call what they call the entire administrative state into question? And that's something that bears very close watching and is often hard for, you know, ordinary people to follow, because it'll be, you know, the Merit Systems Protection Board or the peekaboo and so forth. But these rulings are really quite important.
And it could mean, I mean, the way I think about it is, you could end up with a kind of partisan divide where what you have is liberal legislation that is trying to advance sort of progressive goals, and a conservative court saying, actually, the government does not have the authority to implement these. So you end up in a kind of battle like that. Roseanne, is that a concern that you see, a conservative court standing in the way of liberal legislative priorities and therefore increasing the partisan divide?
Certainly that's a possibility. I mean, the other thing that's new here in terms of, you know, how are we evolved in terms of questions of legitimacy is that the speech that the new justice gave at the confirmation hearing last week, in which he was explicit about, you know, revenge of the Clintons, unhappy with the election results, gave some litigants fodder to explicitly call him out as a judge, as a sitting judge, to say, you, having said these things, are not capable of being impartial when these and other issues are presented to you. And I think that is something new and dangerous in a different way, that the court is going to be continually called out and asked to demonstrate its impartiality in a way that we want to be a given.
So I think we have footage from that. So let's play a clip of Kavanaugh at the confirmation hearings.
This whole two-week effort has been a calculated and orchestrated political hit, fueled with apparent pent-up anger about President Trump and the 2016 election, fear that has been unfairly stoked about my judicial record, revenge on behalf of the Clintons, and millions of dollars in money from outside left-wing opposition groups.
So this speaks to what you were saying, Rosanna, which is he raises the political stakes himself by invoking political differences.
That's right. Explicitly, literally, just if you pull a few phrases out, revenge of the Clintons, you know, left-wing groups. Justices try to avoid terms like that at all costs. And he's a sitting judge even while he's saying that. So for litigants to think that they're going to go in and get a fair hearing, I think that, you know, there's a good reason for them to be skeptical about that. And when you call that out, that's when you start to really erode the fundamental legitimacy of the institution.
Well, apparently not everyone agrees. Let's go to David from Natick. He's got an opinion on this. David, how you doing?
Great. Thank you very much for taking my call. I just wanted to comment on the perceived legitimacy concerns. I personally don't believe that there should be any legitimacy concerns of the Supreme Court. And the reason I feel that way is because Judge Kavanaugh has been a sitting judge at a very high level of government for a very long time, and there have never been any concerns about his impartiality as a judge. And just a comment about the statement that Judge Kavanaugh made during the confirmation hearing, I believe that it's very difficult to separate personal and professional feelings. And I think when somebody attacks him personally and does what they did to his family, I think he's going to respond one way. I truly hope and believe that he will respond a very different way when he's sitting justice.
Thank you, David. I mean, David raises a good point, which is when the nomination was announced, legal scholars from really across the spectrum came out to say he's a respected person in the legal field, he's qualified, he's competent. That is, sort of the politics was hidden behind these claims about competence and have been for a long time. So I think there is now this argument that maybe it's actually a good thing that Kavanaugh has come out and been directly political. It strips the veil away from a court that has long been political. And Garrett, I'll ask for your sense. Is there a sense where actually this is just exposing the politics that's always been there, and maybe that's not such a bad thing?
You know, I'm sitting here trying to be a good sport and to find the silver lining in this, and I ain't got it.
I tried.
Yes, no, I appreciate it. But, you know, I think what Kavanaugh did in that speech, he crossed a line that Clarence Thomas never crossed. He pulled back a mask. If that's a mask, if that's the way all the justices are, then the Supreme Court has no legitimacy. And I think, you know, to show the degree of to which he crossed the line, you just have to consider that Justice John Paul Stevens, 98 years old, a man who has seen, you know, maybe almost a quarter of the Supreme Court's history, said, you know, shortly before the vote that he did not believe that anyone who was capable of making that statement ought to be on the Supreme Court. I was stunned when I saw that. You know, it's one thing for me to say that he shouldn't have done it. John Paul Stevens, a lifelong Republican, to say that a specific nominee did not belong on the court, we are in uncharted waters. And, you know, Justice Kavanaugh is no longer the well-respected judge he was before that speech. He is now the person who said those things, and he is going to have to deal with that legacy.
Rosanna, you see a silver lining here?
I'm not seeing the silver lining either. I'm trying really hard. I mean,
man, I'm selling this, but nobody's buying.
You know, one of the things that we've learned since, you know, high school civics is that we have two branches that are explicitly political. We vote for them. We campaign. But then we have this third branch that's different and special. And if we get to a place, as we really are right now, where the law is what five justices say it is, and it just depends which five justices those are, then I think we're in a very dangerous place in terms of our perception of and the reality of the rule of law, that there is this buy-in of our citizenry, that there really are principles out there that are discernible and true and not just a head count each time the issue comes up.
So what is to be done then? Garrett, packing the court, term-limited appointments, endless investigations, what should people be thinking about?
Well, you know, I think that it's a little early to start about packing the court. If I, you know, I live right down the street from Congress. Last time I saw there was a bunch of Republicans there and not enough Democrats, you know, to pack a phone booth. It's probably early to think about that. But I do think that the dialogue that is now taking place, which began at a low level after Bush versus Gore, but is now picking up speed, about, you know, what is the role we want a court to play in our democracy? How did this happen? You know, it's not at all clear that the framers of the Constitution anticipated that the Supreme Court would be this kind of arbiter of constitutionality. Maybe we want to consider the jurisdiction of the court. Maybe we want to consider not, you know, that justices should be active justices for 18 years and then remain justices but no longer sit on cases after that in order to assure turnover on the court. That's a good discussion. I would hate to have it framed purely in partisan terms of when, you know, you watch, when we get a majority, we're going to investigate the living daylights out of you. That I don't like to hear. And I don't think it serves anybody well.
It may not serve anybody well. It may happen anyway. That is, if the Democrats take the House, they will have the power to continue investigating Kavanaugh's past. In fact, let's go to a caller. Mike from Framingham has something to say on the subject. Mike, how you doing?
Hi, I'm doing just great.
Glad to hear it.
Other than my head wants to explode after this nominee was nominated. It's just an incredible injustice. Any other candidate would have been gone after his behavior, just his behavior alone, never mind the numerous lies that he said. And for a Supreme Court justice to lie so consistently, it just boggles my mind. But there was one part of it that I believe the Democrats dropped the ball on. Mr. Whitehouse, Senator Whitehouse, asked him Devil's Triangle. And Kavanaugh hesitated and said, drinking game. And they moved right on. Now, if Mr. Whitehouse would have said to him, explain how you win Devil's Triangle and how you lose Devil's Triangle. How do you win that? How do you lose that? Because all games, there's a winner and a loser, and in drinking, you know, it's, you can look at it. Do I have to take the drink or don't I have
to? No, Mike, this makes good sense. And I'm going to ask Rosanna about this. What happened? Had they pushed harder? Are they going to continue pushing? Do you see?
I mean, this is the comment that so many people make, that the Democrats, you know, come to a knife fight with a dill pickle, you know, and they don't really know how to fight back in the trenches in that way. And there were certainly opportunities to get a more rigorous cross-examination there and reveal plainly to the listening public the degree of deception that the justice, now justice, was engaging in. But they just didn't have the stomach for it. And in addition, I think that format of these 5-minute quickie questions was never going to really give anyone the kind of traction that your caller would have liked to see. Going forward, you know, the question is, do the Democrats just wait it out and get their turn? And when they get their turn, they pack on their justices. I think that there's definitely an appetite for something a little bit more brutal than that, that, as you suggested, a reopening of these investigations if and when the Democrats have the House, a continuing exploration of whether there are other accusations or of the testimony of the justice himself. On the other hand, no one wants to see that. No one wants to see someone saying a sitting justice is going to be interrogated about perjury. So it's a no-win.
That's Rosanna Cavallaro. She's a professor of law at Suffolk University. Thanks, Rosanna.
Thank you.
Also with us from Washington, D.C. is Garrett Epps. He is a professor of constitutional law at the University of Baltimore School of Law. Thanks so much, Garrett.
Enjoyed it.
Stay with us. There's more ahead. I'm Evan Horowitz. This is Radio Boston.